back to FinTalk, brought to you by Venmo. Here we discuss pressing topics in fintech, regtech, covering regulatory, collateral and digital across banking and insurance and finance. Venmo has been proud to deliver innovative software solutions in the industry with stability and cost efficiency for our global watchdog clients. With over 20 years of trusted transformation in finance and insurance, we're bringing industry's top expertise to FinTalk. I'm Jared Akhtar, and I'll be your host for this podcast. Please note that the discussions and opinions expressed within this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily represent the views of Venmo or the FinTalk brand. The content provided is for information purposes only. Welcome back to FinTalk, brought to you by Venmo. I'm Jared Akhtar, your host. So today, I'm delighted to have Kashia. Kashia is an advocate for women in tech. Kashia, a few words about people that don't know you.
Lovely to see you again. Happy New Year, first of all, and Brilliant to be back with you and the lovely people who are supporting all the things that we are passionate about. So I've been working in professional and technology services for nearly two decades, which sounds like a terrible number, but I've always worked in what we call emerging tech talents and with a great passion for gender diversity or bringing technical skills and business skills into the marketplace through programs such as social mobility, supporting women, women returners, ex-forces, neurodiversity. So naturally, the topic of diversity inclusion has always been very dear to me.
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting this time to actually talk now about it. I want to dive in. I just want to pull out some stats that I read. And we can dive into each aspect separately. There's a key stat here. Diverse companies earn 2.5% higher cash flow per employee. That's just one. I'm going to get a couple more. Inclusive teams are over 35% more productive. Diversive teams make better decisions 87% of the time. Just as we're going to, I know we're going to dive into it. I know that you're a huge advocate to all this. Your thoughts initially on that?
So is it a hype or is it obvious?
Well, yeah, that's,
Well, naturally, we all know, you know, because both you and I and a variety of our friends and colleagues works in multicultural environments. And we know we see the benefits. And there is statistically a proven fact that indeed these organizations are much better performing. And naturally, you know, the employment, the workforce represents the customer base. So it is also not only important in terms of the sort of the cultural makeup, but also in regards to whom they are they dealing with, who are they selling to, who are their stakeholders. So yes, naturally it is a significant and important fact, but is it enough and is it across all sectors? So this is where we probably would need to look under the bonnet. Where do these statistics come from? Whether you're UK-centric, whether they specifically represent any organizations? Because I think we're going to chat about it today in terms of data transparency when it comes to diversity, which is one of the quite key elements to really moving the needle going forward.
Yeah, and I kind of want to touch upon the work you do as an advocate for women in tech. One of the stats I saw from last year from one of the consultancy firms was globally in financial services, sector that we're both in, women have held 21% of board seats, 19% of C-suites, and 5% of CEO positions. That's globally, right? UK, 18% is C-suite, and 22% is senior leadership.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And yeah, you do a lot of work in this area. And, yeah, that's as of, say 18 months ago, those stats. Obviously, you've seen that increase, and you know, in some areas that's increased twofold, some areas it's increased fivefold. Still slow progress nonetheless. But what's your thoughts on it? I know you've kind of been doing this work and I've been in this industry for a while.
So interesting, you know, when I started sort of my career, a lot of my clients, actually the majority of my clients were investment banking organizations, and my stakeholders actually were key decision makers. And in fact, a lot of them were men, but they were really, really keen themselves to bring more diversity into the organizations. And over the years, yes, we have moved in the needle a little bit, but it's just not enough. I'm not sure if you are aware, but there is actually quite a large investigation in Parliament actually for a campaign called Sexism in the City, which is actually looking to tackle some of the statistics actually in what you've just mentioned. That's obviously run by Women in Finance Charter and looking at the sort of FTSE Women Leaders Review data. And I've got other stats as well. So our centre has revealed some challenges with regards also to not only women, but also people with disabilities. Only 76% of people with disabilities even not disclosing. And we've got 4.6% of people with disabilities disclosing. So within, let's say, we've got the women factor, we've got disabilities, we've got other characteristics that make up our workforce. And each of these organizations, we're trying to pull as many stats as possible to be able to address them both in our communities, individually, as organizations, as leaders, to be able to actually push the dial a little bit further. But obviously, naturally, you know, there are questions around this is still so slowly progressing. And, you know, last year was particularly fierce for the sector, as we know, with multiple round of layoffs, closed tech companies, large enterprises. And what we have also seen, there's quite a negative backlash around diversity, equity and inclusion. So I've been reading quite interesting stats and articles that specifically actually in the US, hundreds of companies have been re-examining the DEI initiatives after a series of the diversity challenges. But the question was, why were they investigating them? And an interesting fact came out of this, that it was based on the fact that litigation, they wanted to make sure that there are no concerns regarding, you know, any lawsuits with regards to people being discriminated. And obviously we did see a lot of DEI initiatives and layoffs actually in this space as well at the end of last year. So we've got a bit of a criticism around DEI initiatives, you know, from different from business leaders. We've had a situation last year from NHS, also comments from Steve Barclay around did NHS really require such a huge spend on DEI consultants. So this is a very, very interesting time actually to address the importance of DEI and why is pivotal actually for businesses to create that, you know, prosperous economy. But I think for me, the way things potentially should be shifting, because, you know, a lot of organizations are actually diverse, they are inclusive. It's more around the sense of belonging for individuals. You know, do the people feel they belong? Do they feel that the organization they work for represents what they're all about, or do they feel they're represented? So I'm seeing actually quite a big shift into more of a concept of cultural intelligence and really certainly moving away from putting people in the boxes or boxing our characteristics, but really try, you know, organizations looking to build frameworks that are based really on our acceptance, on our being proud of, you know, our heritage, our culture, our languages. You know, we all bring something to our ecosystems. But, you know, we're seeing a little bit of a disparity. So it's good to have these conversations to make sure that we will still address the real challenges, such as gender parity or gender pay gap or, you know, lack of social inclusion.
Yeah, we haven't. Gender pay gap is obviously another area that we will discuss. But you say the reason why the American firms went out to have a look at it because of, you know, potential lawsuits. There was a requirement, but it's been delayed to publicly kind of disclose this level of information. There's only a couple of firms that actually disclose that voluntary. But are you seeing that starting to change? I know until it becomes legislation, companies are not forced to do it. They need to do it, right? Why open yourself up to abuse like that? But from what we're seeing and from what the kind of work you and your teams do, are we seeing that starting to change now? I'm seeing a lot of more people kind of into those roles and that kind of awareness now, the cultural awareness as well, starting to come in to these kind of firms. Ultimately, it's always going to be down to culture and change, you know, until that is kind of challenged, not much is going to change, right? It's not really a box-ticking exercise. It's kind of how your whole ecosystem should work. I know you're saying that, and you said to me earlier, there's sort of small changes that you're seeing. You know, how does then one accelerate these changes?
I think there's also an interesting word that you mentioned. It's around challenging. It's around challenging the status quo. I think what we're going to see this year, you know, with the focus for the organization is still, they're still regrouping after last year. There's still a lot of recalibration when it comes to what does this workforce going to look like for a lot of organizations after the tech layoffs, now with obviously the introduction of AI. But I think, in much as we know, I love seeing so many people contributing and creating communities that drive, and this is what we're seeing with regards to women and girls in technology, mentoring programs, accelerator programs, and really communities collaborating together. But, you know, we all know that in large organizations, in the larger enterprises, it's the leadership and the decision makers that really needs to walk the walk and talk the talk. So it's more around that sort of a top-down, not bottom-up approach. What we've been seeing is the kind, you know, since George Floyd movement and neurodiversity, a lot of actually it's coming down from, let's say, when it comes to university, parents who perhaps are caring to children who are neurodivergent. And we're starting to see more role models coming through, people participating in employee network groups. We've seen this also with the BAME movement in terms of that sort of ethnic and racial awareness. So we've seen that bottom-up approach really pushing these conversations to the forefront. Now, how can we fix it? You know, what is it that needs to be fixed? And it is all fixable, you know, the gender pay gap, the sort of the cultural barriers, and you know, that is really down to the CEO, the management, the leadership to be able to recognize it, to be able to address it, to be able to be authentic about it. And I think, you know, with obviously there are requirements from the government in regards to disclosure when it comes to, for instance, some of the diversity data. So any organization that's over 250 employees, they are required to disclose some of the data around the six characteristics. But not all the data needs to be gathered and shared. Now, we also have an aspect of when it comes to disclosing the data, as I was saying, there are a lot of boxes to tick. And, you know, do people really feel like they may identify only with one? You know, let's give an example. What if you are perhaps as someone who is white but lived in Spain, for instance, and you speak Spanish and you can identify with that culture, and then perhaps you worked in Asia, you have multicultural awareness and you know exactly what it feels like, what it means. So that's why that cultural intelligence, that cultural agility is going to play, I think, a pivotal part as we sort of evolve the DEI conversations forward, you know, into 2024.
We all know, I mean, you see the stats that we read out at the start. Diversity in not just males and females, but also, you know, racial diversity and all that brings a whole different ball game, a whole different thinking as well. So it's not just, you're not just ticking a box, you are the value it brings. You know, it says here, you know, diverse companies earn 2.5 times more cash flow per employee. That's staggering amounts, you know, especially if you're like a multinational company. How does that all, we see it at kind of the bottom, flowing that through to the top level, how does that then impact that? And, you know, we've spoken about it offline, that black box thinking, rebel ideas kind of thing, how that all kind of brings it together to have not just 10 people doing the same thing that have the same thought process. Actually, if you have different people in the team and they bring all kinds of thinking and mindsets to a task or to, you know, a project or something, not only culturally enriches you and you learn, right? I learn from someone else. That's, yeah, yes, okay, yeah. Makes my learning and my growth, personal growth as well. How much of that is very important? It's not being pushed through at the moment. It's kind of still being kind of on the surface. That needs to be accelerated as well.
It does. And it is happening. It's just, it depends on the sort of which organization. We know with regards to publicly listed companies, they are much, you know, they're much more exposed and they've got those requirements to share the data with the shareholders and with the market. But I think this is again why the question is, you know, do the leaders know the organization? Do they know the people? And how can they? How can we help? How can we help the leaders get to know their own organization? Because naturally, if you're, you know, if you're CEO of a, you know, a FTSE company with 30,000 employees, you know, you will know more or less the footprint, but you will not know every single, you know, individual that works on the company. So we have to kind of assume that by default, this organization is diverse, it is multi-polarized. I mean, not only do we have obviously all the attributes around, you know, some of these characteristics regarding gender or ethnicity, but we are have also entering into an era where we've got multi-generational workforce. Mm. So what does it mean? That it means that pretty much every single individual in the organization is very likely to have slightly different needs. And again, this is a really important point for leaders to address. How can they create an organization where everybody thrives? And this is where we need to stop, because at any age group, we will have all the, I say, the verticals when it comes to gender, race, or any other attributes that we deem as those specific characteristics. But we also have the element of the needs, moms, which was caregivers. We've got a society where, if the predictions are correct, that one in two people in our society is going to have cancer. How are we, as organizations, as communities, ready to be able to support? Because by statistically, then you're looking at a workforce that is going to have, let's say, potentially 30% of people caring for someone who's ill, whether temporarily or terminally, or they may themselves be ill. So this is what I call, you know, another sort of another pillar to diversity, which is around caregiving. So What needs to be happened, that's why I'm talking about sort of a more of a data-driven diversity and data-driven sort of a cultural intelligence, that the leaders and decision makers need to be equipped with data. And again, it's not so much about, you know, people ticking the boxes based on their appearance, let's say, or fitting a certain group, but also how they feel, what they think. So giving them opportunities to make decisions based on the data that's coming straight from the organization. So, you know, what sort of tools are, Diversity Atlas is a great tool that I've been recently looking at when it comes to aggregating and populating data for decision makers in the diversity space, and surveys, and understanding how people feel. Do they feel that people belong? And as long as they've got this information at hand, and then they should be then able to address, they can challenge themselves, the biases, because obviously we don't want to just say that it's leadership who's at fault and then everybody else is right, or that all the employee engagement groups are working in the same fashion to achieve the same goals. We don't want to be also in the situation where we've got employee network groups, for instance, only lobbying for their own interests. This is when we're going to have potential risk of exclusion and not inclusion. So as long as the decision makers and leaders are willing to take the challenge, address it, and challenge whatever that is in front of them, that's okay. And again, diversity inclusion means different things to different people, also depending on the geographical location. Do you work for an organization that has got multi-geographical locations, or is it located in a specific demographic that by default potentially may draw a certain sort of a demographic into that location? Let's say, you know, let's give an example, Tata Steel, who's currently laying off a lot of people in Wales. They are located in a specific location, therefore, you know, they will have a slightly different demographic than perhaps another company of a similar or even a different branch of this organization. But I would say that data-driven and cultural intelligence are what's going to really help everybody moving forward, because I think everybody wants the same thing. You know, we want to be treated equally. We want to have the same path to success. And I think another challenge that we see is that we still have got quite an old-fashioned hierarchical system in larger organization, and slightly old-fashioned sort of a performance review processes in some organizations. So these are the things I think that also will be evolving, because naturally, you know, when you've got a large organization in a bit of a pyramid structure, the funnel into the senior opportunities careers, it just will automatically narrow. So not everyone will have the same opportunities. So we do have to look at the element also of organizational structures.
Yeah, I think that's organizational structure is back, you know, we come back to culture as well. Culture changes, organizational structure needs to be reviewed.
Right. They're all interlinked.
All interlinked, right? I mean, data is a big thing for both of us. So yes, understanding, it's not about having the data, it's about understanding the data. You know, I'm a strong believer in diversity, more so in the thought process that it brings to the table as well.
And I think another thing is that, you know, what does good look like? Right, you know, it's how do you interpret the results? You know, what do you want to see? Are organizations scared of publishing? You know, is 17% of such and such demographic too low or too high? But this is again a complexity in the culture, the discussions that we need to have, because there isn't really one template that one size that fits all. But we know that. We need to have representations. It's around representation.
Yeah.
Represent, making sure that everyone in the society has got the right access, and then they can choose for themselves and contribute to our society in the best way possible. Yeah.
But then, you know, we say that and we talk about that. But then the other side of it is the cultural side of it, the diversity of it, the rechange of the culture side, you know, organization review as well. Until the government forces, or until legislation forces you to disclose that, then that kind of becomes, you know, if it's voluntary, why am I going to open myself up? But then we've got, you know, we go back to RegTech and we talk about, we have ESG disclosures that are coming up.
Mm. You
know, that and the social part of that and the governance part of ESG will require that level of data. So you're going to have to start building that data up at some point and then to start disclosing it.
Well, you know, we're very likely to have an election, you know, that we're going to see changes in the space for sure. It's being already flagged in the debates that you're seeing in Parliament around 16 in the city, with other things coming into these conversations. So you're right. If there is the need to disclose or demand from the government, the same as with AI ethics, right? How this is going to be also influencing how AI is also deployed in the space of diversity. A lot of people are talking about biases, that it can create biases, but also we're going to see probably tools that will help us to create, to actually address and approach these communities that maybe we're not seeing the blind spots effectively within our organizations. So there is a very important, I think, need to sort of bridge the gap between the organization, the government, and the willingness to collaborate. But, you know, in my case, I would say I'm seeing a lot of effort from, even though, you know, when we talk about women in tech, from male allies who are very, very committed to creating better sort of career opportunities. But at the same time, how can we change the narrative into an action point? Again, there is a way to fix it. You know, perhaps every male ally, whether they will focus on gender equality and bringing more females into the workplace, or neurodiversity or disability. We do have to talk about disability inclusion as well, which is very, very important. They can give themselves a KPI and they say, well, I promise that, you know, this year I'm going to sponsor one female into such and such a career. I'm going to create a mentoring opportunity for this person. I'm going to do this, this and that. So I think we do need to create, we need to make people accountable, and ideally we want them to be making themselves accountable to create better environments. But decision makers still are on the fire, so we need to let them lead, and we need them to listen, and we need to pressurize them and challenge them as well.
That's a good way to end. Thank you so much, Kasia, for that. And it's a really thought-provoking session. Thank you
very much. Part two coming up?
Indeed, yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.